Morning broke, and Monahan was up with the sun. By the time Julia and Sweeney woke, he had finished giving General Grant the grooming of a lifetime. The horse had fallen asleep twice and threatened to doze off again. Stroking the general's low-hanging neck, he ruffled the precisely combed mane with his fingers.
When do we leave?
He turned toward the voice. She was familiar, safe. A slip of a little red-headed girl, riding the cusp of womanhood. He squinted. He almost started to ask her what her name was.
What's for breakfast?
I was about to ask you the same.
Somebody say breakfast?
A young man sat up, scratching his neck.
Who'd want to waste good victuals by letting you stuff your face with them, Butch?
Monahan frowned. Who the hell are these folks, he wondered. The boy was fully grown, but young enough to be his, he supposed. And the girl, well, he must have wed himself a fine young woman to have sired such a beauty with her. He was a lucky man. He glanced over at the dog, still lying where it had been when he woke. It still stared at him curiously, occasionally cocking its head to the left or to the right, eyeing him with something akin to suspicion.
And what's the trouble with you?
You feed him any breakfast yet?
Well, no, I don't think so.
Monahan frowned again. He couldn't remember waking up. He ran his hand through his horse's mane again, realizing he could remember the horse's name and that it was his. He'd won it in a poker game. He couldn't recall the proper names of either the young man or the gal, although he'd just heard the girl call the boy Butch. But they both seemed familiar to him, as did the dog. The girl stuck her arm in a big flour sack beside his bedroll and began to dig. Assuming she had located the grub, he finished up with the general. Then he sat down in what he took to be his place. If it wasn't the damnedest thing, not being able to remember. He would have said something to somebody in the hopes that they could sort it out for him, but despite the feeling that his companions were familiar and could be trusted, there was still a nagging doubt at the back of his mind. He'd let the day play out and see what happened. He leaned back, pulled the brim of his hat low to shield his eyes from the sun, and dozed off. Something was wrong with Monahan. Julia was certain of it. From the looks of things, he had gotten up a long time before her and Sweeney, but hadn't roused them to get a start on this supposedly important day. And the topper was that once they were mounted up, he had just sat there on General Grant, looking at her and Butch like they were supposed to lead the way. Sweeney had noticed something too, so at least she wasn't going crazy. Julia had caught his eye after they rode out of camp. He looked as confused as she felt, but did no more than shrug by way of an answer. She had guessed, and rightly so, that she'd get no answers from him. Not at that time, anyway. Sweeney gave a quick glance around, wondering how much longer they would continue riding aimlessly. He shook his head. They'd been moving since early this morning, traveling for all the world as if they had nowhere to go and no business to see to. Monahan rode that old bay horse like some kind of saddle tramp, a man with no purpose and no goal. They couldn't be more than a half hour from their destination, perhaps just minutes.
You'd think he'd at least show some enthusiasm, nervousness or something.
But Monahan plodded along like there was nothing on his mind, like he hadn't put Julia in danger just by bringing her along, and like there was nothing ahead of any particular import he had to attend to. It was a downright puzzle, that's what it was. Sweeney would have called a halt to everything and asked him outright, except, it was Dooley Monahan. Sweeney had too much respect for his elders to call the old cowboy on his behavior. Well, not his elders so much, but Monahan, anyway. The vegetation was weird. They'd pass clumps of trees, then ride through desert for a while, then come to a big grove of trees, and all with the river rushing along not 15 feet from his right ear. He tried to figure out how close they were to Mexico, but had no frame of reference upon which to draw. He figured they were pretty well near the border country, since Monahan had told them to watch for Apaches. They raided farther north, of course, but he hadn't even seen old signs, let alone new. And that told him he and his companions were pretty safe from Redskins. Still, he kept his right hand near the butt of his gun. Roughly 15 minutes later, Sweeney involuntarily reined in Chili, stood in his stirrups, and pointed to the east.
Dooley!
Julia reined in right away, but Monahan kept on riding.
Dooley!
Monahan reined his horse and turned around in his saddle.
You say something, son.
Them buildings over there. Is that Heber's Kiss?
In the far distance, the roofs of two buildings peeked through the rocks. After taking a long look, Monahan turned back to Sweeney.
Heber's Kiss?
Dooley, are you broke in the head or something?
Why do I act like it?
You do. You've been acting funny since this morning.
Monahan crossed his wrists over his saddle horn and leaned toward her.
Well, do tell.
Well, you know, stuff. You've been acting like you got... Well, I don't know, but your head ain't screwed on right.
Since this morning.
Since this morning, Dooley.
Sweeney wasn't going to let Monahan weasel his way out. As Sweeney figured it, he and Julia had risked life and limb, and at the least were owed an explanation. He realized all of a sudden Monahan hadn't called either of them by name since the night before. Hell, the old cowboy hadn't even used the dog's name.
Dooley, just what in the name of everything holy is going on with you?
Monahan surprised everyone by calmly drawing his gun.
What are you gonna do?
Just who the hell are you, boy?
It's me, Dooley. Butch Sweeney.
And her?
Julia Cooperman, as if you didn't know. Good Lord.
They had just ridden into the town, but it was barely a wide spot in the road. Conveniently equipped with a dusty old saloon, a falling-in-on-itself livery, and one other building, which Julia took for an outhouse. Blue tagged along happily, his tongue lolling. But she saw no signs of people until they rounded the saloon, to what she guessed was the front. It had a big sign, although she couldn't make out the letters on the weathered boards, and a burro, tethered to the remnants of a hitching rail. The burro was halfway packed. She looked over at Sweeney, who shrugged.
This must be the place, I reckon. Got any more of them lemon drops?
Of course I do, but now ain't the time to be...
Shut up, the both of you!
They stopped between the two ramshackle buildings.
Get down!
He eased himself off his horse and down to the ground. He led the general forward.
Well, come on!
Sweeney ran forward to catch him by the shoulder.
You're not taking her in there.
Monahan whirled about and brushed Sweeney's hand aside.
I'm taking her, damn it. For sure he saw us riding up. If we leave her outside, he's bound to figure something's afoot.
Oh. She just better not get hurt, Dooley, I mean it.
Curtly, Monahan nodded and continued forward, leading General Grant. Julia, feeling safe as a baby, hopped down off her horse and followed. Sweeney brought up the rear, holding both of their horses. They tied the horses at the broken rail and entered the saloon. It was deserted. Sweeney looked around.
Maybe he's closed.
Somebody in the back room dropped a case of something and set the air practically throbbing with the scent of good bourbon whiskey.
Or maybe he's not.
If he bust just one little vial of eau de cologne, smell like that French sporting house up in the... somewhere, I forget.
Monahan pulled out a ragged-looking chair at the only usable table in the place and waved Julia into it. Dooley sat down next to her, facing the bar, and Sweeney pulled out the chair next to him. Blue walked farther into the shotgun-style building and took up a position at the far end of the bar, out of everybody's sight, excepting Julia's. She thought it was odd, and was about to remark on it when the man came out of the back room scrubbing the backs of his hands with a bar rag. His hair was a white shock, and the scar ran up his cheek and across his eye, just as Monahan had described it. He was on the thin side, and appeared to have been brought up on hard living. His face was haggard and nasty, lined with age. He was death incarnate, and would think no more about ending their lives than another man might feel about swatting a fly. For the first time since they'd set out for Heber's Kiss, Monahan's quest for revenge became horribly real to Julia.
So, there's folks around here after all. I'd about given up. Hope y'all have got a powerful thirst.
He leaned on the bar. He gave no sign of recognizing Monahan.
So, what can I get you?
I would like a couple shots of that good bourbon I'm scenting, with beer chasers, and something plain with no hooch in it for the missy here.
Surprise me.
You heard the lady.
Their host walked out of the room and into the storage area.
It's Vince, all right.
Julia looked up from the table's scarred surface.
He scares the pee out of me. I mean, I know you told us, but hearing about him is one thing. Seeing him is another.
She flicked a glance across the table at Sweeney. His face echoed her unspoken fears.
He's obviously loading the good stuff onto the burrow outside. He's planning on moving out. I say we let him.
You ain't got a choice, boy.
Vince George emerged from the back room carrying two bottles under one arm and three glasses clipped between the fingers of the other. Julia stared at the table while George poured bourbon into shot glasses and slid them in front of the men. Beside her, Monahan dug in his pocket while Sweeney slouched nervously on his other side, ticking the edge of his left cuff with his right thumbnail. A minute later, the barman shoved a full glass in a dusty old bottle marked Sullivan Sarsaparilla toward Julia, then accepted the coins from Monahan.
That's for the whole bottle of sarsaparilla and the bourbons. In case we change our minds about wanting more bourbon, why don't you leave that bottle on the bar?
For a moment, Julia heard another sound in the bar. She could barely hear the soft and menacing, I mean business, growl.
Not the time for it yet.
The time came sooner than anyone expected. The door to the back room burst open. Vince George strode behind the bar, holding a shotgun across his chest. He didn't notice the dog.
Ain't I seen you before, mister?
No, sir, I don't think I ever had the pleasure.
Not you, idiot.
George swung the shotgun, its muzzle aimed straight at Monahan.
You, old buzzard, who are you? If you give me a summer name, I'll know it.
Monahan, who should have been scared out of his skin, leaned back in his chair and smiled real friendly.
Didn't think a normal person could recollect clear back to the old Monty's Raiders days. Congratulations.
Vince cocked his head, surprised, but still determined. Down at the end of the bar, Blue silently raised himself up and put one paw on the scarred bar's surface. Monahan noticed him and did everything he could not to call attention by looking at him.
I'm curious. Who'd you think I was?
Still don't rightly know. Fella I thought you was, well, he's long dead.
Silently, Blue brought his other front foot up onto the bar top.
Well, some folks figure as how I'm long dead, even whilst they're talking to my face. My body's mind plays them funny, sometimes.
Monahan tossed back the rest of his bourbon.
Believe I'll take me another shot of that bourbon.
Monahan rose to create a huge vacuum in the space he'd been sitting. Julia, who had been leaning toward him without realizing it, had to grab the table's edge to keep from being sucked into the empty space his absence created. Vince George gave a wag of his double-barreled gun's muzzle.
Hold it right there. Either you say who the hell you are, mister, or I'm gonna give you a mouthful of this here shotgun.
Blue leaped down the bar. Vince swung the barrel toward the movement. At the same moment, the old cowboy shoved Julia's chair over sideways, leaped over her sprawled body, and grabbed the shotgun's swinging barrel, yanking it upward.
Leave go, you murderers!
The dog's mouth latched onto the bar owner's arm, and Monahan yanked the shotgun out of Vince's hand. Blue clamped down on the side of Vince's face, and the old owl hoot fell backward, cracking his head hard on the floor. Monahan set the spent shotgun on the bar and poured himself another shot of bourbon. Julia grasped her chair and dragged it upright, then hauled herself up by its seat.
What happened?
She looked around and saw Sweeney on the floor, Monahan lifting a glass to his lips, and nothing else. No sign of the dog or of Vince.
I wish I was a man.
Whatever for?
So's I could have me a drink.
Don't see any reason why you can't.
He poured out a second drink while he flicked a glance over at Sweeney.
You all right, boy?
Hell no, I'm not. I'm goddamn shot. I'm dying.
Oh, crap.
Dooley set Julia's bourbon on the table and took two long steps over to where the young cowboy lay. Taking hold of Sweeney's shoulder, he rolled him onto his back.
If you're dying, it ain't from them little drill holes that buckshot put in you.
He raised his hand and picked out a single piece of buckshot from the man's forehead.
See that? There's your slug of death. Probably bounced off the wall before it hit you.
Monahan held it up for Julia. Numbly, she took it. Things were moving too fast for her. Monahan turned his attention back toward the bar.
Blue?
The dog rounded the end of the bar and came toward Julia. She held down her hands.
Hello, boy. You all right? Let me see.
Wagging his rump, Blue leaned into her hug. There was blood on his mouth and down one side of his muzzle, but that was all she could find. Still clinging to the dog, she looked up at Monahan.
I don't think he's hurt. There's so much blood.
Monahan nodded curtly.
Vince's.
Is he...
Banged his head, I reckon. Serves him right, all things considered. Boy, you gonna figure out you ain't dying and come help me?
Sweeney slowly pulled himself into a sit. He wiped at his forehead with the back of his sleeve.
Let me look at that for you.
He shook his head, scattering the last few droplets of blood.
Wanna have me a look at Dooley's old friend, Vince?
Don't believe he's dead?
Just wanna double check, that's all.
Sweeney went to the bar and looked over and down.
It sure looks dead.
Don't he, though?
Vince George was dead indeed, but Monahan didn't feel like burying him. Part of him figured the old owl hoot just plain wasn't worth it, and the other part of him was too bone tired. Fifteen minutes later, after leaving Vince's body on the street, unhitching their horses and settling them in the barn, Sweeney and Monahan walked back inside. Sweeney went to his chair, sat down, and faced Monahan.
Dooley, you gonna tell me or what?
Well, don't know exactly what it is you want me to tell you, son.
What just happened and why and how come were any of us still alive?
Julia, still sitting where they'd left her, just squeezed her eyes closed. Monahan lay his head down on the floor, well, leastways on his saddle, which was serving as a pillow as usual, and closed his eyes.
What just happened was that we did what we came here to do. The fact that we're all alive and Vince George is out front drawing flies, well, that's nothing more than a whim of fate.
It wasn't often fate chose to smile in Monahan's direction, and he intended to sit back and enjoy it while he could. He had explained it to Sweeney the best and only way he knew how, and he hoped the boy had accepted it. The girl had been easier. He didn't have to tell her anything. She had just closed her eyes in that woman way. He didn't know how else to describe it, and it was understood, just like that. On the other hand, Sweeney had seemed to accept it, but he was still sitting up at the table, nursing a bourbon and contemplating the night sky through the open doors. Dev and Alf Baylor rode into Yuma, stopping just long enough to pick up word about travelers fitting the descriptions of Monahan and his friends, right down to the dog, and to spot an old friend in the prison yard. Alf was about to call out and raise his arm in greeting and alert everyone in the surrounding area that they were on the Owl Hoot Trail, but Dev stopped him just in time. Alf never made things any easier. He was running true to form an hour later when they ran across a fella's campsite between the side of the road, which had petered out into a trail by then, and the river. He was a big fella, cooking his beans, and didn't seem happy to see them. Alf rode right over and slid down off his horse.
Howdy.
If you boys are planning to rob me, you gonna be plumb disappointed.
No, sir. Didn't even plan to stop. Sorry to bother you. Come on, Alf.
You run across an old geezer named Monahan? He's riding with a young fella and a gal. She's just a kid. And some kind of dog. Got word they were headed down this way.
Your friend call you Alf? That's your name?
That's me.
Well, it's like this, Alf. They're headed down to a little wide spot in the road called Heber's Kiss. They're probably there already. You find them before me, you can do whatever you want with them. But leave the girl be. She's mine.
We'll leave the gal be, mister. Got no quarrel with her.
The big man nodded.
Name's Smithers. Kirby Smithers.
We're the Baylors. I'm Dev, and this is...
Kirby Smithers hiked a brow but said nothing.
Come on, Alf. Let's leave Mr. Smithers alone.
But Dev...
Now, Alf.
Reluctantly, Alf remounted and tipped his hat to Smithers, who did little more than scowl.
Thank you kindly. We'll heed your advice about the girl.
You better.
Smithers turned his attention back to his cook fire.
Dev, how come we couldn't eat? He was making stew.
Because he didn't ask us, that's why. We can make our own damn stew.
But have we got any meat? I can shoot some, I think. Can you shoot a fish? Or mayhap we could have a frog stew. I hear him croaking out there.
There's ham in my saddlebags. Just keep riding and shut the hell up. I mean it.
The next morning, after Monahan attended to the horses, he walked back into the saloon to see that Sweeney was already awake and sitting up in a chair. But Julia was nowhere in sight.
Where's the... Found the kitchen. Says ain't nothing to brag on, but it'll do.
It was good news to his ears because it meant he was off the hook for making breakfast. He collapsed into a chair and leaned back. It was a good morning for reflection.
I was born and raised up on my family's farm in Iowa. They were the Monahans, David and Janine. They came from Pennsylvania. When I was about 20, I rode south toward the Missouri border to pick up a new milk cow for my ma. Except I got waylaid by bad company.
He rambled on through the years about Monty's raiders and the chain gang and all the rest that he remembered. Or at least from what Buckshot Bob had told him. Sweeney had the good sense to keep his mouth shut and let the old man talk himself out. Talk it dry and to the bone, and say it all while he remembered it as clear as he was ever going to. He ended with the burro up on the big pile of straw outside, and the body swelling up in front of the saloon. And then he knit his fingers together behind his head.
And that's the end of the story.
Not yet, it ain't.
Julia entered the main room of the saloon along with the tantalizing scent of fried ham. She rounded the end of the bar, a plate in each hand, and slid them onto the table.
There you go. Fried ham out of a can and some good canned tomatoes I found in the back. Not much to choose from, but then I figure beggars can't be choosers. I'll get the coffee.
The men didn't waste any time. They dug right in. It was so good, in fact, that Monahan didn't miss having potatoes or toast one bit. Julia brought out the coffee and her own plate and joined them for the rest of the meal. Monahan was feeling so chipper, his thoughts turned to what ought to be done with Vince's remains.
I think we ought to give old Vince some kind of burying today.
It's about time.
Be glad to lend you a hand, Dooley.
I'd be right appreciative there, Butch. After we let breakfast settle a mite.
That sounds good to me.
Sweeney pushed away his empty plate, polished off his cup of coffee, and leaned back in his chair with his arms crossed over his belly.
Oh, I could use a nap.
Quit stating the obvious.
Julia started clearing the table and snatched up Sweeney's plate and mug.
You're practically face down in your coffee, you slug.
Stop it. Just hold on.
Julia, hands full of dirty dishes, walked back around the bar and threw Sweeney a dirty look before she disappeared into the back room. Julia set to work with the dirty dishes while Monahan and Sweeney were out front digging Vince's grave. When Julia heard the shot, she ran up to the doorway. On the ground by the half-dug grave, Sweeney was bleeding. He tried to roll closer to Monahan, who'd managed to roll close to the saloon steps and was tucked under the narrow lip of the walk. A second shot missed Sweeney by a foot, but cut a groove in the dirt near his head. He held mostly still after that, but managed to get his gun drawn. He held it low, hugged next to his body. Julia ran for Monahan's rifle, which he'd left in the saloon with his saddlebags. She wrestled it free and quickly locked the building's back door. Back up to the front, she cocked the rifle and stood at the ready. And then, nothing happened. She waited a tense 5 minutes.
Where are they, Dooley?
A hand slowly rose up from below at the edge of the walk. It pointed behind her and behind the saloon, and then sank back down. She furrowed her brow.
Blue?
Before she knew it, he was pushing his head into her hands. It was hard to take it and hold the rifle at the same time, but she managed.
Who's out there, Blue? Who's shooting at us?
She heard a noise from the back of the building. Blue did, too. The noise came from a door she'd just locked. Somebody was trying to break in. Quickly, she shifted herself and the dog. She leaned back against the front wall and rested the rifle on her knees. She had a straight shot down the back hall to the rear door. Whether he broke the latch or busted in the lone window in the storage room off to the right and crawled in that way, whoever it was would have to walk up that short little hall, and she was convinced he wouldn't live to get to the end of it. She might have been only 13, but she was bound and determined to be 100 years worth of trouble to anyone who tried to mess with her, or Dooley, or Butch, or Blue.
Julia! Julia, girl!
She turned toward the familiar voice. There was nothing but the front wall behind her. To peek under the door, she'd have to scoot over 7, maybe 8 feet, but didn't want to take her eyes off that back hall. So she sat where she was, eyes pinned to the rear of the building.
What?
Julia, whatever you do, don't...
The door burst in. Julia steadied her aim and squeezed the trigger. But the form kept coming at her. Blue looked up and raced toward the crippled form halfway down the back hall.
What the hell's happening in there?
Got him.
Got who?
Don't know. One of them anyway.
Don't move.
Julia slumped back to her former position and got the rifle settled on her knees again.
Blue, get back here.
He came and she pulled him close, even though he had a bloody front from nosing the corpse.
This time you stay here no matter what. I love you, you big dope.
She steadied the rifle.
Don't you go running between me and that hall. I'm dangerous.
According to Monahan's figuring, the remaining Baylor boy was still around the side of the building, biding his time. He could be 6 inches from the front or 6 inches from the back, or anywhere in between. And on either side of the building. But wherever he was, Monahan hoped the petty outlaw had heard Julia say she'd killed his brother. Sweeney was still lying near the grave, leastwise the beginnings of it. But he was all right, thank God. He had signaled Monahan with his eyes just before that Baylor had taken his last shot.
Psst.
Monahan looked toward the source of the sound.
He's around the back of the saloon. Tell Julia.
You could have told her yourself.
You're closer.
Oh, criminy.
Dooley turned toward the saloon.
Julia! He's coming your way!
She didn't answer. Monahan started to sit straight up.
Julia! Julia, honey, you hear me?
Inside, Julia sat in the same place, wide-eyed, her expression momentarily frozen with shock. Her fingers were laced through the thick coat of the dog's neck and locked into place. Blue had attempted to cross the room after the second rifle shot, but her hand had stilled him. Down the hall lay the Baylors, sprawled over each other in a dark, backlit heap. The second one had come in quick, but she'd been ready. He had fired, but he hadn't hit anything except for an old piece of slate hung up when the saloon had pretended to offer food. Her second shot had been the lucky one. Well, lucky for her. She supposed it depended on which end of the ledge she was on. She'd come out on the fortunate side.
Julia, you okay?
I'm all right. They're both dead.
After only waiting a couple of minutes, Monahan and Sweeney entered the saloon. Knowing that the danger was over, Julia couldn't help but cry. An hour later, Monahan and Sweeney had finished putting the late Vince George underground at exactly 8 feet from the overhang. They didn't mark the grave, since it was out in what was supposed to be the middle of the street, and also because Monahan claimed he'd be damned if he'd go overboard by marking it for everyone and his brother to see. A few minutes later, Monahan, Sweeney, and Julia set out to the west. A bandaged but cheerful Sweeney sat on Chili, leading the Baylor boys, each strapped to his horse. Julia, numb from it all, rode the horse she called Parnell, leading the burro, whom she had christened Goat, on account of he was up on the straw mound again when she went to get him ready to travel. It was Monahan's plan to drop the Baylors off in Yuma, There would surely be some reward money in it for Julia, and she would have need for money in the years to come. He wouldn't go to the law himself. He was convinced they would recognize him and arrest him without delay for some unknown crime he couldn't remember committing in the times between memories. He'd be dead gummed if he'd let somebody lock him up, or worse, for something he didn't remember doing. Buckshot Bob had already told him he couldn't be locked up for anything he'd done as part of Monty's Raiders so long in the past. He'd never done anything so terrible back in those days that the law hadn't sooner or later reached its limit. He could be grateful for that part. Sweeney was primed to take Julia, along with the bailers, to the marshal's office and collect the money, while Monahan would take the burro in blue and wait for them outside town. He could have cashed in his voucher from all those years ago, too, if he'd only remembered it was in his wallet. When they were closer to the river and could see the green of its banks full of trees, Sweeney suddenly toppled from his saddle.
Off your horse, now!
Julia, Parnell, the burro, and the bailers were off the road and down in the sage and scrub on the northern side. With Sweeney hobbling under his arm, Monahan headed to the south side. Blue followed, low to the ground, with the end of Chili's rein in his mouth. Sweeney had been hit all right, but in the same shoulder where Dev Baylor had plugged him, and the slug had passed clean through. He took the rein from Blue and scratched him between the ears.
You wouldn't happen to know who's shooting at us, would you?
Sure is the day for it, ain't it? You reckon those Baylors have a half-brother I didn't know about up the road with a rifle? I'm only gonna let you get away with limping like you did one time.
You got no idea at all.
Not the first clue.
Makes two of us. Unless somebody painted a sign at us that says, hit me and win a pie.
Hope that girl is okay.
Reckon she is. Reckon that one could walk through a firefight with 10 pounds of dynamite strapped to her and not suffer in the slightest part.
She's a tough little bird, all right.
Monahan turned toward the opposite side of the road.
Give us a peep to let us know you're safe.
Once she'd let out the requested peep, Julia rolled herself up into a ball and snuggled down into the weeds. Suddenly, she realized hoofbeats approached. Not galloping hooves, but slow, walking ones, more cautious than in a hurry. She almost sat up before she caught herself.
Dooley!
Half a second later, a shadow loomed directly over her. Automatically, she thought it must be Noon.
Well, you little she-cat. Stand up so's I can shoot you.
She would have shot him without compunction if only she'd had a gun, or better yet, Monahan's rifle. But she didn't.
Come on, Juju. Come on and let your Uncle Kirby shoot you.
Suddenly, scarlet ribbons were falling all around her. But they weren't ribbons. They were the long stems of the tall spring grass that came with the rains, and they were scarlet with blood, warm and drenching, red as red could be. Slowly she rose to her feet, through the scarlet weeds until her head rose into the clear light, and she saw him, or what was left of him, sitting on his horse with a hole blown clean through his chest. Monahan stood on the trail, 10 feet behind him, holding the rifle.
Your so-called uncle, I take it.
Kirby Smithers in the flesh. Or out of it, I guess. You blew a hole clean through him.
Well, the rifle did.
It's a hole, and it's clean through him just the same. Is Butch...
He'll be fine. Appears that he's a hard feller to shoot square in the middle. People just keep skinning the edges.
Monahan walked forward and held a hand down to her.
Come on now. We gotta get to Yuma before those bailers of yours start stinking any more than they did when they rode in.
I gotta round up the horses. They're probably 10 miles away by...
She felt something push against her leg and looked down to see Blue through the bloody weeds. He had one of Parnell's reins and the lead rope to the burro in his mouth. And he was wagging his hindquarters like a dog possessed.
Little herding does him a world of good, don't it?
She took the rein and the lead rope and moved toward the trail that had once borne the gaudy title of Heber's Kiss Highway. Blue had already rounded up Chili, the Baylor's horses, and General Grant, who had wandered about a half mile south of the road and were damn near invisible since they were standing in thick scrub and grazing with their heads down in the grass. She watched while Monahan fixed up Sweeney. She figured he must have a curse on his left side, except the latest bullet had hit his upper arm instead of his shoulder. It had gone clean through, and the wound wouldn't need sewing. But still, it had to hurt something fierce. They tied Smithers, deader than a bent spoon, but still stubbornly slumped over into his saddle. She swore she could see right through him where the slug had passed through the cage of his rib bones and burst out his front. She was a little surprised the sight didn't make her throw up.
Statement of Miss Julia Cooperman, as given at Yuma Prison Marshal's office, received by Marshal Sam Peck. May 3rd, Year of Our Lord, 1873. My name is Julia Cooperman, age 13, formerly of Iron Creek, Arizona Territory. My friends and I were passing through a town south of here called Heber's Kiss when we were beset by outlaws, who we later learned were the infamous Baylor brothers, Alf and Dev. They cornered us in an old saloon, which was deserted aside from us, and where we had taken shelter the night before. They shot my friend, Butch Sweeney, twice in the shoulder and left him lying in the street. I was pinned down inside the building. The back door opened and Alf Baylor burst in. He carried a pistol and was swinging it around. He shot first but missed me. I didn't miss him. Mr. Sweeney called to me from outside to watch out as Deb was going around the back. He came in all right, firing his gun. I shot back. My slug struck him and he fell to the floor. I called to Mr. Sweeney, who came in to see that I was safe. He checked the men to see if they were dead. They were. The other body belongs to my guardian, Mr. Kirby Smithers, also of Iron Creek. He was shot in the back by one of those bailers. I don't know which one because he was in the stable and I couldn't see him. I hereby swear that this is my true statement, and I witness it by signing here below. Julia Cooperman.
After Julia made her statement and signed it, while she nervously crossed the fingers of her left hand in her pocket, the marshal filed it away in his office.
All right. I'll get one copy of your statement sent to the bank up in Prescott tomorrow. You'll have your copy and your voucher to show when you get to a bank.
They camped by the river's bank. Monahan made a fire near some scattered boulders about 15 feet from the water's edge and threw together the fixings for a good beef stew made with the victuals he had bought in town. Sweeney took some more of the pain medicine the doc in town had given him for his arm and shoulder after he dug out the last of the slugs, and Julia snuggled down with her blanket and waited for her supper. The evening air was crisp, and she was glad for the blanket's comfort.
I've been thinking.
Everybody ought to think. Good for the soul. What's got to be in your bonnet?
What has it?
Well, you're thinking that you've seen enough bad things in the past couple of days to last you more than a lifetime.
How'd you know that?
Well, I reckon we all feel about the same way. A little bit of dying and body shooting at you with iron goes a long way with most folks.
Yeah, reckon it does.
Even when it comes for some trashy scum like it done for the Baylors. And Vince.
And Uncle Kirby?
Yeah, for your uncle, too.
Monahan poured them both a cup of coffee and handed hers over.
Did old Blue take a crap close to camp?
It's me, not Blue.
Huh?
I sat in some wolf scat earlier, back when Kirby put us in all the weeds.
You won't get yourself cleaned up?
She slowly got to her feet and scowled at him.
If you're trying to hint, you ain't doing a very good job of being roundabout.
You got just enough time for dinner. Get out of here and take that wolf stink with you. It's upsetting the dog.
Blue stretched out on the other side of the fire.
Yeah, I can see that he's all out of shape about it.
She pulled her spare britches out of her saddlebags, found the yellowed sliver of soap she'd stolen from the saloon's makeshift kitchen, and made her way down to the riverbank. By the time she'd scrubbed the britches clean, dried off, changed clothes, and made her way back over to the fire, Sweeney was scraping his plate clean.
Guess I got back just in time to get my measly bite of stew.
Measly? Since when did you ever take a measly bite of anything?
since I made your acquaintance and started having to share grub with you. See there? It's practically gone already, and I ain't yet had a bite of it.
Hold it! I swear, if words were clubs, you two would be black and blue. Here.
Monahan held her plate, full and still steaming, out toward her.
Oh. Guess I was yelling without thinking. Sorry, Butch.
That's more like it, girl.
Monahan promptly threw a spoonful of hot beef gravy in his direction.
Hey!
The next day found the trio back on the old Mormon trail, again heading east toward Phoenix. And more important, back toward Buckshot Bob and May Hoskins' ranch and stage stop. They couldn't get there fast enough to suit Monahan, although Sweeney, who was still healing from his shoulder wounds, would have been content to throw down temporary roots anywhere along the trail and just sleep for a few days. And eat, too, of course. As for young Julia, she went along with mixed feelings. She missed the safety and comfort of the Hoskins home and the friendship of their daughter, Maggie. She had never had a real buddy before, but despite their short acquaintance and the slight difference in their ages, she and Maggie had become great friends. As for Sweeney, she'd miss him more than she'd ever admit. But it was the old cowboy and the dog who tugged hardest at her heartstrings. Not that she'd say as much to him. She'd already told Blue, and she figured that was enough. Blue miraculously managed to keep up with them, despite the heat, trotting at a steady pace in the shadow of one horse or another. It took them several days on the sparkling-sided trail to reach the Hoskins Ranch, and once there, they received the warmest of welcomes. It was like they were genuine conquering heroes, Julia would later say. It seemed as if no one who had met Dooley Monahan escaped his presence without becoming a fan. And while she wasn't absolutely right about that, she was close to it.
I appreciate it, Bob.
The two men were sitting out on the front porch, smoking, and everyone else had gone to bed.
Poor little thing ain't got nobody or no place to belong.
Well, the gals have taken a real strong liking to each other. It's as good for Maggie as it is for Julia.
About what I thought. Now, don't forget about them reward vouchers. That's Julia's money for her life.
Beside Monahan, Blue stretched, then flipped over onto his back. It was the end of a long, hot journey, and he was grateful for a night with good food and fresh water. He sensed that Monahan was relieved, too. He'd felt the old cowboy truly relaxed for the first time, and it was good. When Julia woke up, she wandered out to the kitchen, letting Maggie sleep while she could. Julia found a stack of hotcakes on the table, along with a bowl half-filled with fresh whipped cream and a pitcher of blueberry syrup. There was oatmeal on the stove, too, but not one living soul in evidence. She walked up to the front door and walked outside. Monahan and Sweeney were out front. General Grant and Chili were tacked up and ready to go. And Bob and May were bidding them farewell.
You're leaving? And you weren't even going to wake me up?
Monahan let the cinch strap drop, then pulled the stirrup free from the saddle horn and let it swing down into place. He turned toward her.
Well, good morning to you too, Miss Julia.
Don't try to make me feel guilty just because I didn't say good morning.
Now, honey.
You were going to leave me without so much as a by your leave. Please. Don't! You can't!
Monahan tossed his reins to Sweeney, stepped toward her, then took her in his arms.
Now, honey, don't go and make a thing of it. I just convinced myself it'd be easier if we... Well, if we was already gone when you got up. I don't know what to say to you, Julia, honey. Just didn't figure you'd take it this hard. Now, me and Butch ain't going to Europe or nothing. We'll see you again.
She lifted her head and looked up into his roomy old eyes.
I wish you were my paw.
She ducked back down again.
Oh.
She felt him kiss the top of her head, then release her. She fell into a sit on the porch step.
All right then, Bob. Take care of those kids, May.
Goodbye, Julia. Take her easy.
She felt warm fur brush against her arm as Blue came over to say goodbye, too. His tongue wiped the tears from her nose and chin.
Oh, goodbye, Blue Dog.
She opened her eyes and found him looking back at her, his eyes filled with love.
Travel safe, Blue.
In 5 days, the men had got as far as Phoenix. Sweeney had no clue just what Monahan had intended to do regarding a plan. Every time he had broached the subject, Monahan had managed to turn the conversation on its head and thoroughly distract him. The old cowboy had parked them in a hotel far from anything interesting, and Sweeney was bored silly. He had never before been to a town the size of Phoenix, and despite the nagging ache in his wounded shoulder, he'd been looking forward to spending some time in the big city. But all Monahan did was complain about how expensive everything was, and about Apaches, and how far they had to go yet, which was still a mystery to Sweeney. He'd only been out of the hotel twice to check the horses. He'd taken his time on both occasions, walking down the street several blocks in every direction, north, south, east, and west. He'd seen houses, big houses, little houses, shanties and lean-tos barely cobbled together, nice houses where families lived, and fancy houses. He'd been tempted to go into one of the latter just to see what it was like. Well, and test their wares, he had to admit. But he was too poor to walk through their front gates, let alone ask a lady upstairs to pleasure him. He was broke. He wondered if Monahan had any cash on him. He'd spend more time with the bodies than Sweeney had. Maybe the dead men had been carrying a roll. He hoped it had been the bailer's cash. Somehow he didn't want to be living on money that should have gone to Julia, which her uncle's money surely should have. Fresh from his latest fruitless visit around the town, Sweeney walked into the hotel lobby only to meet Monahan, who had just come downstairs. Sweeney had done little more than open his mouth when the old cowboy grinned wide and threw his arm around Sweeney's shoulders.
Hey, let's get us some dinner, boy.
Sweeney was too hungry to do anything but accept. They went into the hotel's dining room and were seated. The serving girl handed them menus. She waited patiently while they considered their choices.
I'll have the special with extra potatoes and a beer.
Same.
Dooley lit the smoke he'd been fiddling with. It was a ready-made. He favored them when he could get them, but he could only find them in big towns. Phoenix qualified, he guessed. Why, there must be better than 1,000 people here. There was a big cotton gin and a medium-sized ice house, and a fellow raised Appaloosa horses on the edge of town. A public schoolhouse was planned, and work was already being done on the courthouse, since the Capitol was switched between Phoenix and Prescott every 5 minutes. The Capitol on Wheels, people called it. Monahan just called it foolish. But all in all, he liked the city. The folks were friendly, but they didn't overwhelm a fella. Dogs were welcome most everywhere, and Mexicans could go about anywhere in town and not get sniffed at nor get a rock upside the head like they got in many towns. There was also the big First Territorial Bank of Arizona, where he planned to go in the morning to finally cash in his voucher. He supposed it was still good anyway, even though he'd been carrying it for a few years. He'd found it again while they were still camped outside of town. He also discovered something was missing, some piece of paper or other, but he couldn't remember what exactly. He'd been puzzling over it all day, in fact, and had remembered at long last, not what it was, of course, but the fact that it had existed. He'd been planning to ask Sweeney about it at dinner. Their dinners arrived at that moment, and they began eating.
Hey, Butch, you remember as how I had a slip of paper, something or other, in my wallet? You remember? Did I ask you or the girl to carry it for me, maybe?
You mean like a newspaper article or something?
Yeah, a newspaper clipping.
Sweeney reached for his wallet and pulled it from his pocket. He rummaged around for a moment before he took the paper out between two fingers.
Like this? About Alaska?
When he held it out, Monahan took it from him.
Yeah, about Alaska. About how a body can strike gold up in Alaska.
He rubbed at his chin, then took hold of it like he was going to pinch it off.
Screw that ranch.
Butch looked at him like he'd gone crazy.
How the hell should I go to work on some lousy cow spread for $10 a month, and I can go to Alaska and get myself rich? You go up there and work if you're so dang set on it.
Fine, I'm going with you.
Go with me? You crazy?
Why should I get my legs or ribs busted up by some crazy cow when I could be tagging after you, making my million? If I hadn't given you that clipping, you would have forgotten all about it.
He had a point. Monahan had a hold of his old chin again, rubbing and squeezing it. He didn't want to let Sweeney know how mad he was or how close he was to just killing him. Well, not killing him all the way to death, but something awful close to it.
Just who the hell do you think you are to muscle in on another man's dream?
The young cowboy leaned his chair back against the wall and pillowed the back of his head with his hands.
I ain't muscling in on nothing, Dooley. Sounds like a good plan, that's all. Why, the fact is, I'm fair keen on the idea.
All the air went out of the old cowboy like he was a big balloon somebody had just stabbed a hatpin into. He leaned his elbows on the table with his head in his hands.
Dooley? Dooley, are you all right?
Monahan looked up suddenly.
Oh, goddammit, I'm not all right. Just doing tarnation you think you are, stealing everybody's dreams and making them your own. You think I'd just roll over and let you do it because you've been some sort of help these last weeks? You think I'd just hand over everything I've been wishing for just like that?
Butch blinked but said nothing. Monahan stood up.
I don't think so.
And then, before he had a chance to do any more thinking on the matter, he marched out of the dining room. It wasn't until 3 hours later. He hoped Sweeney had thought he'd spent them in a bar, but which he really spent alone in the boarding stable talking to General Grant, that Dooley came halfway to his senses. He didn't own Alaska. He didn't even own a parcel of land up there. He had never been to the place and had no say in who went there. Who did he think he was, God Almighty? He suddenly felt very small, so small that he nearly got shorter.
Gotta do it, General. Gotta back down and let the boy go where he wants. Gotta let him be his own man. After all, he might have seen that clipping anywhere. He might have talked to a feller on the street or in a bar. Anybody might have told him about Alaska.
You in here all alone, waxing poetic over Alaska? Still?
Monahan looked to his right, and his eyes narrowed to see through the gloom. He made out a spare man, not tall, but not somebody you'd call short either, dressed in cowboy gear and leaning in the shadowed doorway. Dark hair, he thought, clean-shaven. He didn't have the first clue to the man's identity. The man didn't seem to be having the same trouble with him, though.
Been a while. How you been keeping?
Tolerable. And you?
About the same. Still got the bunions. Still on the scout.
Oddly, that sounded a little familiar, but out of long-standing habit, Monahan didn't relax one iota. Behind the cover of the stall's walls, he let his hand drop to dangle stiffly near his colt. And then, without warning, a word sprang from his lips.
Miller!
I was thinking you had another of those clobbered times of yours. It's good that you remembered my name, Dooley. I feel better about you now.
Good for you.
Monahan still couldn't place the fella, still couldn't consciously fit him into any background or with any group of people.
Oh, think, Dooley. Think the spring roundup in Fort Carroll, Wyoming, about 6-8 years back.
The man stared at him, looking for some sign of recognition. Apparently, he didn't see one.
Don't you remember? Scalper Johnson was up there with us, and the kid, and Darby. You spent the summer carving skunks out of pine knots when we wasn't working, and the kid spent about all his time trying to figure out how to sell them. Oh, come on, Dooley. Say you remember just a little.
I may know your name, but that's all I know. Not your face, not any of those other names you said. I'm an old man. I got enough ghosts already. Leave me be.
Miller, who appeared to be about 40, maybe 45, shook his head sadly.
Well, all right, I'll let you get on with it. But I'm staying at the Adams, and if you remember anything, give me a shout, okay? Room 207.
Room 207.
Don't forget.
Yeah, I won't.
The old cowboy might have forgotten where the hell he was 5 or 6 years ago, but he wouldn't forget this little encounter if he had anything to do with it. It might take him a while, but...
Luden. Luden's Mill.
That's right, Dooley. The L/M, Colonel Harry Luden spread.
Monahan let his fingers twitch and his hand rise away from his gun.
Colonel Luden wasn't there. He'd been called up.
He remembered something about the Ludens. They hadn't owned the spread that long, and he'd been told that after Vicksburg, the colonel had been called back into service by the North. He'd been gone before Dooley showed up, and Dooley left before the colonel returned. 2 years had been spent on the Luden spread, 2 years filled with ravening Indians and cougars and unrest.
Did I serve?
In what, the war?
Yeah,
sure you did. At least you said so.
For the North?
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the rest came flooding in.
Oh, now I remember. George Miller, right?
George Miller was some years younger than Dooley Monahan. At 5'10", he was taller than average, and his dark brown hair had only just begun to gray. When Monahan had known him up in Wyoming, it hadn't yet begun to turn. And he remembered being mad at George then for not aging like he had. He felt old age slowly covering him all over like candle wax. But his anger had disappeared in no time once he got to know George. And now, just like then, he felt all his initial uneasiness melt away.
Knew you'd remember if I give you enough time.
Miller's smile grew into a grin that exposed the hole left by a missing incisor on the bottom and a gold crown on top. He came forward to greet Monahan with both arms out. They embraced over the stall's rail.
Well, it's good to clap eyes on you again, George.
Dooley, you're a sight for sore eyes yourself.
Dooley was suddenly exceedingly grateful he hadn't shot Miller on first sight. He'd been sorely tempted, he'd admit, if only to himself.
What you been up to since the L/M?
Oh, some of this, some of that, you know. After Wyoming, I went out Virginia City way. Did some work on a big spread there. But you know how it is. After a while, you start getting the urge to move on. So I lit out again.